Well, welcome. Nice to see so many of you at TechEd in Madrid. My name is Matthijs Hoekstra. I'm a product marketing manager. I skipped the marketing on the slides. I was afraid you wouldn't show up if I would say I was marketing. I'm in the Windows Phone division. I started in April. Before that, I worked at Microsoft in the Netherlands. I just moved with my family to Seattle, which is nice. So I'm responsible for reaching out to developers who would be or might be interested in building enterprise and line of business apps. So my team, we are responsible for all the developer outreach for this kind of sessions and content, the content on build, etc. So if you go to the developer portal, that's our team which is responsible to do that. So what I want to do today is talk to you about our Windows Phone developer platform, a little bit behind the scenes, why we did what we did, and get you set up so you know what's there, where you can get started. And I hope if you are enthusiastic, I can point you to the different sessions we have this week, which will go much more in-depth than I'm able to do now. So if you're expecting like a level 400 C++ session, I'm having to disappoint you. There is some C++, etc., but you have to go to, for example, the session of Martin, and he will go 1 hour deep dive in that kind of stuff. So it's more about the overall picture today. So that's going to be my agenda for you guys. So Windows Phone is built for business. You will see the slide lots of times during phone sessions. And there's a reason. We didn't communicate it very well in the past, it's my feeling. But Windows Phone is really a great phone for businesses. We have a great unified user experience on Windows and on Windows Phone, and even on Xbox, if you're familiar with that. And I advise you to come to our little booth. There's a theater session where you can see there's three screens connected to each other in a nice demo of around 50 minutes. And you can win a free phone as well. It's productive and connected. It's using Office. It's using Exchange and Link. It connects to the stuff you already have in your organization. So that's an added value as well, right? A robust platform for mobile apps. That's what we're going to talk about today. A little bit about Windows 8 as well. And it's manageable through device management with Intune or other MDM provider, which are out there in the market and good partners from us as well. And it's a common core and security architecture, and we're going to talk about it a little bit in a couple of slides. So Windows Phone, we saw a pattern. And I guess we did it ourselves when we were running Windows Mobile. People run mobile phones, Windows Mobile, 6.6.5, and before that. Do you still remember that we were really, really happy with that at that time? People tend to forget, right? And then this other company came around and reinvented what a smartphone was for the end user. So they really turned upside down what the user experience was supposed to be. And a lot of people thought that was interesting as well, and they copied it. We started from scratch and thought, well, what's the best way to get people and make it a people-centric phone? So we changed a little bit. So this is the look and feel you have for Windows Phone and Windows Phone 8. The tiles, which give you information in a glance, so you don't need to open up the apps if you want. You can see immediately if you need to open the apps or not. This is something with Windows Phone, and this is something you as a developer can use to build really exciting apps as well. So Windows Phone, yeah, we're not a leader, and we know that, but Windows Phone is breaking through. People get more enthusiastic. There's a couple of markets where we are gaining a lot of market share. There's even the market with 20% market share. Some bigger markets are gaining as well, so people like the phone. We're getting great reviews, so we are from being a solid contender like to a compelling leader in UI and user experience, so which is a good development, I guess. So we already talked about the common experience between Windows tablets, Windows desktop, and the Windows phone. We now have a new smartphone platform which supports multiple cores. There's a graphic processor in every phone. What that means is that every single Windows phone will be fast. So if you go down to the device bar at our booth, we have devices from, I think, ranging to $500 to $150. You can't buy a bad Windows phone. They will be running your apps really fast. There's performance differences, obviously, but you can't buy a slow Windows phone at the moment. That means that every app you write will run on all those phones. We have different screen resolutions, and I will show you in a bit how the tools will support you building apps for those different resolutions. And we have a removable device. You can encrypt the local storage set by policy by the IT administrator. And we have on most of the phones, we have NFC as well. So we have a shared core with Windows Phone and Windows 8. What does that mean? That means that we share literally code from the Windows, big Windows. That means that we have the same kernel, which already runs on 1.3 billion devices. Windows Embedded, Windows Server 2012, Windows RT running on servers, for example. All those machines running the same core. That means if the Windows Phone team checks in code in the kernel, that's going to be reused on the Windows as well. They really share the same core on engineering, about engineering as well. That translates to having the same runtime, maybe? Well, not quite complete yet, but we share some APIs. That means that you can reuse your code when you're writing for Windows Phone 8 or for Windows 8. I think it's now around 20% shared. So, for example, if you do NFC code or you do in-app purchases, that's exactly the same API. You can do networking stuff, TCP stuff. It's exactly the same. So if you architecture your solutions right, you can do a lot of reuse, which means that if you target Windows and Windows Phone, you can lower your cost because you don't have to develop for every different platform. We obviously trying to improve that, so it's now 20%, and we want to increase it as much as possible with every release. So what we can do, because we share the kernel, is we can share the file system code. We can share the encryption part. So all Windows phones, you can like encrypt locally by using BitLocker, which is available on Windows 8 as well. We do the secure boot, so it's a secure platform. That means that the hardware is trusted by using UEFI boot. It means that it checks the signatures of the OS before it starts it up. All the drives need to be signed. We share the graphics support. We share the support for multi-core, so we have now a two-core phone, but we can scale up to 64 cores if we need. Sounds a bit crazy now, but I guess in a few years it will be pretty normal to have a 64-core phone in your pocket. It doesn't mean that you can write an app for Windows Phone and it just works on Windows 8 or vice versa yet. We hope to get there somewhere someday, but at the moment that's not the case. It's more about sharing your code and your libraries and create a project for every different architecture. And there is a session this week which talks about how you can set up that smart so you can do reuse. And there are some samples of companies who build apps for phone and Windows 8 with 90% reuse. It depends on how difficult the UI is. Obviously, a big screen has a different UI than a small screen which is in your pocket. But there's a lot of similarities in your library. So you can be smart and reuse that stuff. So let's talk about how you build apps. Yes. So this is an overview of the developer platform available for Windows Phone developer. You can choose between using C#, VB.NET, and you can also use C++. And C++, adding C++ is pretty important, and we will talk about it a little bit. There's a huge library you can use about using the camera, threading, touch, video, etc. Everything you need will be there. You can use XAML. I don't know if people are familiar with Silverlight or WPF or maybe Windows 8 development. We use the same common technology, which is XAML. It's like an XML definition for your UI and behavior, and I will show you in a little bit how that looks like. There's the integration with your live tiles, and C++ part is doing the direct 3D games, but might be image manipulation libraries or VoIP applications, for example. So you can combine these two technologies if you want. So it's a pretty rich set of libraries and APIs available for you guys as a developer. And depending on what kind of functionality you use, you can reuse your code. XAML and UI is available on Windows 8. It's a little bit different, so you might reuse UI, but I don't see that in practice that often. It's for the UI is separated, but the technology is the same. The C++ DirectX stuff is absolutely the same. So you can rebuild your app from Windows Phone to Windows 8 without modifying your code if you need. And there's HTML JavaScript. Windows 8 does have the HTML JavaScript development environment. Windows Phone does not, but you can use, for example, the IE10 web browser control and run your app inside it. So it's pretty common to do like these hybrid kind of apps. You build HTML JavaScript, you package it up in a browser control with some native stuff in there, or maybe you can bridge through native from HTML or vice versa. That's happening a lot as well. So you can reuse the HTML parts you use, for example, for other platforms as well. That's possible by using the browser control. So let me just show you how our tools look like. If you have questions, raise your hand. I will repeat the question, and I might be able to answer it. So I need to switch my machine. Set it up. That's good. Yes. So what I'm using here is Visual Studio. I think I have the ultimate version, yes. You can use Visual Studio Pro, and you can download the free Visual Studio Express for phone development from our website, dev.windowsphone.com. There's a free version for Windows 8 as well, but if you already have Visual Studio installed, it will just install the SDK on top of your existing Visual Studio. So let me start a new project and get you started on how this looks like. So we already installed a few templates for you. You can have a blank app, you can have a panorama app, which is like the wide kind of application you have on Windows Phone. I'm assuming that you already saw the UI and the interface of Windows Phone. You can build an HTML app, a Didact3D. Just let me just start with a blank of a better panorama app. There's a choice between 7.1 or 8.0. So there's still a lot of Windows Phone 7s out there, and there's also a lot of new Windows Phone 8s out there. So as a developer, you have to make a choice, which platforms do you want to support? All Windows Phone 7 apps will run on Windows Phone 8. We changed the environment. The Windows Phone 7 was running on CE with Compact Framework. Windows Phone 8 is running on the NT kernel with the core CLR. And we made a quirks mode, which makes sure that all the weird behavior as well from the old platform still works on Windows Phone 8, so you don't have to worry about that. So if you want to target the broadest set of developers, you might be building a Windows Phone 7 app. Or what you can do is build a Phone 7 and a Phone 8 app and maybe use new features for Phone 8 in the Phone 8 app and not use that in the Phone 7 app. For example, Facebook does that. There's a Facebook version for Phone 7, and the Phone 8 version uses, for example, the lock screen integration, which is only available for Windows Phone 8. So it's up to you what you choose. So let me just choose the 8 version. So it will open up the main page of the XAML. That's the start page of my project. There's a designer on the left side, the XAML, the XML definition of the UI in the middle, and my project structure is here on the right side. So there's the main page of XAML, app.xaml, that's like the startup. You might be familiar with web development. There's always a global.asx, for example, which is run all the time when you start your app, and there's some resource, etc. An important part of your application is the capabilities. So Windows Phone apps are driven by the capabilities it can support. So when the application is installed, we review the applications by a certification team, which makes sure that you fulfill all the technical requirements and also the content policies. It's not allowed to, I don't know, nudity, for example, or putting people up to destroying things or hatred or discrimination, all that stuff. Pretty common, but we check it, the content anyway. And if the application is approved, we sign the application and it's put up in the store. When people download it to the phone, we only run signed code. So you can't run unsigned code. If you want to sideload as a developer, you unlock your phone with your developer account, and then you're able to sideload your application because it's signed with your own key. So no unsigned code can run on Windows Phone. Because the phone apps are running in a sandbox, in a container, we run on least privilege chambers. That means that, for example, if I only allow the application to connect to the network, and I might be squeeze in some code which does camera work, we deny that access. So because you don't have the capability defined to your manifest, the application can't escalate to that kind of privilege. Here you can define if you want to support the different resolutions. So you have like the WVGA, WXGA, and 720p. There's three different resolutions we support. And it's up to you if you want to support it or not. It would be wise to do it because you cannot reach as much possible phones as if you want, but it's up to you. I like the different icons. Here's the capabilities. So do you want access to the appointments on the phone or to the context? Do you want to capture the ID of the user, the location? And if you want to use a location, the user is warned when he installs the app. Okay, this app wants to use your location. Are you okay with that? And an extra certification requirement is if you use location, there should be an opt-in, opt-out inside the application for a user. And the certification team will test that in your application. If it's not there, it will fail your certification. So here you can define what your application should be capable of. So if you don't allow the networking and you try to do it, you get an access denied. And some requirements as well. So it's more the hardware requirements. Is there a front camera or rear camera? Do I need it? It's yes or no. So users can be warned if they want to install an application and they don't have a device where this hardware capability are not available, they don't buy the application for nothing, etc. And this is just a really nice UI for an XML file. So this is the same file as you just looked at with, through Designer. Question?
So there is the choice of screen resolution that I can support. If I choose not to support a screen resolution, what would be the behavior for a user that has been that screen resolution?
So the question is, you can support different resolutions. What happened if I like uncheck a resolution and a user on a phone with a resolution tries to install the app? He gets a warning that the app won't work on his device, so you can't install it. Or you can't buy it either. So it will still show you the app in the store, but you just can't download it. And what you see here on the top side, so this is the main page. I have my XAML. So this is a panorama view. If I go down, here's a panorama, which is called my application. I can change the text. It will all show what we are used to in Visual Studio. It will automatically change it. We can have different items with different designs. So here's my, my first item. You can change that. You can go to your second item. It will automatically does that for, switch to the design in your designer. Here's a list of debuggers, of emulators I have. So it's an 8.0 app, so it will only show you the 8.0 emulators. If I do a 7 app, it will also show you the 7 phones. You can test your application, a Windows Phone 7 app, on the Windows Phone 7 devices and also on the 8 devices. You can obviously connect to your own device, so if you use a USB cable and your device is developer unlocked, you can deploy it to your real device, which makes sense if you want to use certain sensors, for example, and you want to always test on your device to make sure that the experience is good, right? So let me just start the application. It will start up the emulator. And it says, no, it's just. I think I have a solution open which is still running. There it is. So it deploys the application and starts it for you. If you want to do debugging, etc., that just works. But you're used to it using Visual Studio, you can step through the code, etc., etc. What I also can do is deploy to another emulator. And it will start, and the first time it will be a bit slow because it has load the OS, etc. If you stop it, it will save a snapshot, and you can go from there. It's using Hyper-V for the emulator. So if I go to my Hyper-V manager, you can see there's now 3 emulators running. And if you stop it, it will save a snapshot, and it will start up really fast the next time you use it, which is pretty nice. That also means you can have like different emulators running, and for example, if you want to do some network code, you can test against the different emulators, which is nice. Oh, that didn't work well. Interesting. Wow. Did you ever see that? Me neither. Yeah. Just reboot it, it will start over again. So that's really about what the emulators can do. So we have different emulators for the different versions of the OS. So let's create another project to show you the integration of C++ and manage code. So this is a direct 3D application. So if you're into the games or you want to do some 3D stuff, and we saw some like business apps using 3D as well. For example, British Airways did that. You can select a chair in the plane when you want to check in, and it flies you 3D through the cabin, so you can figure out how far from the entrance is this chair, and oh, that's too far. I can choose a business class seat and pay some extra money and check in on that seat, etc. So you can really add 3D kind of functionality to your regular XAML 2D app, right? So if I run this, it will do the 3D stuff, which is awesome. I have no clue how to do it, but you can do direct 3D, and it will generate the projects for you where you can start. So on the right side, you see this the regular XAML app with main page, etc., and beneath there is the direct 3D stuff, which is in C++. So you can combine these two if you want. So you're hosting a 3D C++ component inside your XAML. And that's done here. It's just adding a drawing surface in your XAML, pointing to your object, which you defined in this this class. So there's another sample. What I already told you, well, what's pretty common, and there's a lot of libraries out there written in C++, for example, image manipulation libraries. So this application shows you a color picture, and if I hit go, it generates a gray image, and we have two versions of it, a managed version and an unmanaged version. So if I go to my code behind, as a go clicked event for my button, it creates a grayscale native and one managed. So if I go to the code, here's the grayscale. It has a bitmap, and it goes, copies the all the bits to this native function, which is filter.convert. It calls my C++ library, does the conversion, returns it, and I will show you in an image control. And the managed one is just doing, it calls the make grayscale, which is this part. So this is a managed code, and I have the C++ version over here. One trick you have to know, and I just found out, I didn't know, is if you start debugging, you can only debug either the managed part or the unmanaged part. So you have to choose which one are you debugging at the time. So not both at the same time. That's a bit of an inconvenience if you have to start switching between C# and C++, but it's just how it is. So you can do both, you can call both kind of libraries from the same kind of source. So we also try to help you where is my photo snap? So for example, if you want to run a photo capture application, I can take a picture, and it doesn't do a USB camera, but for the ID, it will capture the image. You can accept it, and it will show you here. Or what you can do, you can choose a picture from the camera roll or from the library, and I have to initialize it first. So for example, I open Photos. It's a full image running in the emulator. So if I run the application now, photo snap, I want to choose a picture. I have the album now, and I use this one. So you can use image taking from your emulator as well. So that probably you think that's really complicated. No, it's not. So what I have is a camera task. It's just a standard object I can create, and I can connect my event handler when the camera capture task is completed. The same goes for the photo task, photo chooser task, that's the second button, and there's an event handler there as well. So if I click the photo button click, it will just show me the camera tasks, and it will return a result once I choose something. So I can cancel out, of course, it will return. Otherwise, it will give you a stream or bitmap, and you can set the image to this bitmap. So it's like a few lines of code to choose images from your library or take an image. So this one is taking an image, and this one is choosing an image. It's almost the same. just different tasks. And a lot of stuff is done like this. So setting an email, selecting a contact, or things like that. We have tasks for that, which is like a few lines of code, and you can use that in your application. So we try to make it really, really easy. Another part, which is also part of the emulator, and we try to help you out as much as possible, is tracking location. So it's a location app, and it will initialize, and it says, okay, I'm now around here, and we'll expand this one. So we have a couple of tools which can help you. One is the accelerometer. You can emulate the movement of your phone. You can also play. You see the X, Y, Z changing. The image doesn't change with you, but you can play the shake one. So if you try to, if you don't want to run on your own phone, you can still emulate the accelerator. And why is this useful? Well, I can only build silly apps, right? So my most famous apps is Rubber Duck. It was a demo for when I did how easy is this to build apps, and every phone presentation I do has my Rubber Duck. This is doing. Oh, I should put on the sound. That's the only thing it can do. Cool, right? And people, yeah, that's a simple app. My daughter of 3 years loves it. And that was my target audience. But also I'm building a crazy app. It's like, it measures the accelerometer, and if it's like weightless, it measures the time. So if you throw the phone in the air, it will measure how high you can throw it, and it will post your high score to Facebook so you can compete with your friends. But you don't want to throw in your phone in the air with the USB cable attached all the time. So what I did, I wrote a little app which records all the accelerometer data. You throw it in the air a few times. And that's what I use in the emulator. So I can use the emulator to emulate all this accelerator behavior so I can safely develop my app. Hey, I'm trying to help phone sales as well, right? So it probably won't pass certification because you're not allowed to destroy your phone or make it possible to destroy your phone using an app. So I might have to come up with some creative name like Jump Your Car. So you put it in your car holder and it's allowed to destroy your car but not the phone. So it's how it is. But the emulator will help you doing accelerator work. But it also will help you doing location. So if I change the location here, the application tracking should change here as well. I don't know if you see it. Maybe I should use the map application. Does it change? There it goes. So if I change it, it should pick up the change in the emulator, which is not, I guess. But it just get these out of the way. It's getting confused. Come on. It still thinks I'm in the middle of York. So what you can do is you can load some data points from an XML file and play it every 3 seconds, for example. It will change from one point to one point. There it goes. So you can track, for example, you record one a GPS track by walking outside or by driving your car or your bicycle, and you can replay it all the time. So you don't have to go outside all the time. And I know developers like to stay inside, which is a good thing. So they can make it live. So when I click, it should change it at that time. No, it's still not working. Oh, there it is. A bit slow. So it does the recognition of the location, and you can record it and play it. So it's really nice, really nice feature. Another thing which is hard to do is, I think, building phone apps or another app, it's always say, well, it's easy. When you get started, it's so easy. Building a great app, that's hard. And Martin always say, like, a mobile app is like a light switch. It should work instantly. So if you turn on the light switch, you don't want to wait for 1 or 2 seconds. It needs to be instantaneously. So what happens when you run an app on a bad network? So we always test like locally, Wi-Fi, like 1 gigabyte networks, great internet speeds. That's what we have at home, right? But the mobile device are in a pocket. It's pretty powerful hardware, but it might not have been using the best network. It might be not using a network at all, or it's like 3G, or like 5,000 people running around with a mobile phone, and it's pretty slow. So the experience of those apps which are not written well will deteriorate when the network is getting slower. And it's like, and people are really impatient. I can't believe that when I'm running like a 4-core, 8-gig machine and I'm okay to wait for 5 seconds before an app starts, and you're running like a 512 megabyte single core phone, and you have to wait for 2 seconds and the app is crap. That's how people think. So your app should always be responsive. So a responsive application is important. So you need to do a lot of stuff asynchronously. And we help you with that. There's like nice program patterns with await, async kind of stuff. But you also have to test your app on slow networks. So we also have a tool in Visual Studio which help you do that. And not that many people know this tool exists or use it. But you can do some network simulation. So you can enable like 2G or 4G network or Wi-Fi signal strength. So if you do a 2G with a poor network signal strength, your app will be slow. So if you do the asynchronous, like loading image on the background and just pop them up when they're ready, maybe do some nice animation, that's really useful for the end users. So use this tool when you start developing apps and test your app on crappy networks. Because when people review your app, they are pretty honest. Well, you guys are pretty honest when you review my session on the, in the evals as well, so, but mobile users are even worse. So let me just show you the location code I just a little bit. It's pretty easy to start. You have a geolocator, which you initialize. And where is the track location? You create a new object. You provide the desired accuracy. So what we can do, locating a phone, is doing a few things. We can use the Wi-Fi hotspot, and we have a database on the back end which say, oh, well, this Wi-Fi hotspot is over there, which is pretty funny if you, for example, log in on the Wi-Fi network here, it still thinks you are in New Orleans, because that's the last time we had updated our database. Then the previous tagget with all the equipment was in New Orleans. You can do triangulation by using the different cell towers where your phone has a connection with. We have a database of that, which is pretty accurate. And you can use GPS. It's the most accurate, and the combination of all those will be more accurate, but it takes some time. So as a developer, you can decide, I want high accuracy and some threshold when the change will be reported to the phone. And depending on what kind of accuracy you need, it will be slower to get a fix for the phone. And what it does is if the status is changing or the position is changing, it just will call an event handler. And on the event handler, you can do funny stuff. So like draw a pin on a card, for example, on a map. And we have a map control, which is an Nokia map control, which is pretty awesome. And so changing location, do location-based stuff, it's like a few lines of code and you will be working. And obviously you have to provide some UI if you can't get a fix for the user or it's not accurate enough, etc., but that's up to the developer how fancy and nice you will build it. But building a location-based app is pretty easy. Right. So what did we see? Native code. Pretty, it's important. And why? There's a lot of engines written on C++. It makes portability better. There's even like people using iOS and Android libraries written in C++. It helps us port engines like Unity, which is pretty big. They have a beta running on Windows Phone already, so people can port their Unity games towards our platform. We still sell the phone mostly by great games. You could build like an awesome CRM system or line of business app or an expense report app, but people don't buy the app, the phone, because they think, oh, there's such a cool CRM app on this phone. They still like to have the games and all that kind of stuff. So the Unity, AVOC, and all that stuff is really important to have on our platform. I talked about the location. I didn't talk about the mapping controls, but the mapping controls from Nokia are pretty good. It's all vector-oriented, really, really fast. You can download the data offline, so you can use the maps offline as well, which is nice if your app needs to work offline. It's a user. You can open up a task again, so to ask you, do you want to download these apps? The maps, yes, and it will automatically download it for you over Wi-Fi, and the next time the user uses the maps, it doesn't use the data plan. So it's saving you some money as well. There's more stuff available for the developer. For example, sometimes you want your app to run in the background, there's a few scenarios. We don't run apps on the background. If I hit a start button on the phone, the app just stops. You have like a second or something to save your state, and the app will stop working. It freezes in memory, doesn't use any resource anymore. So you always have a good user experience is the idea. So every time you start an app, it has like a full resources. There are some exceptions. So for example, if you run a location app, you can run one location app in the background. So if you like a tracker, which tracks your running or your biking, etc. It's run in the background, so when you get a phone call or an alert or something else, it just keeps running in the background, won't stop. Also same for an audio agent. So for example, if you have a Spotify app, it has an audio agent, will always run in the background even if you start other apps. And it's the same for VoIP apps. So Skype and Link are VoIP apps. You can have them running in the background, so when you get a call, the VoIP agent will answer the call and you can do that stuff, and you can run other apps and still be available for VoIP calls. Some other stuff we can do in the background is transferring files. It's important to upload and download files, but you don't need to run, you have the app in the foreground, but it would be nice that they finishes the downloads if it's still not finished. So we have like background file transfer agents, which are the same on Windows 8, it's the same model, which keeps downloading, even after a reboot, keeps downloading your files until they're finished. And in your app, when you start your app again, you can catch the events, if it's finished, what's the progress, et cetera, et cetera. So that was about development. Let's talk about design as well. And I'm not sure, is some people with design background experience? No, me neither. It's terrible work, right? I don't like it. I want a big button, push it, just works. Unfortunately, that's not how people want to use apps anymore. People want to have apps which are designed nice, work well, are easy to use, without a manual. I never had an app with a manual on my phone. So some design, a user interaction design, is necessary. That's hard, but there are some rules you can follow. So there's some different design principles from our modern UI, it's called nowadays. And they are the same principles the Windows guys and Xbox guys use. They might interpret it a little bit different or use it differently. And I can show you so two apps which are using the same design principles but look completely different. Pride and craftsmanship. That means that you put effort in making sure that the few things works really well instead of like a bunch of things which work okay. In the past, people would have apps with 1,000 features which were okay. People would rather have an app with 20 features which work really, really well than an app with 100 features which doesn't work that well. There's a grid which is available in all apps, and try to line out your different UI elements on this grid. It's a simple thing, and as a developer, we know how to follow rules, right? So make a set of rules, make sure it's all aligned with the grid. Make sure you use the same font everywhere, blah, 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 blah. So if you follow those rules, your app will be much nicer, will get higher reviews when people rate your app. More with less. I know, I'm a technical guy. I think empty pixels on my screen is a waste because you can put information on there. In the modern UI, it's so... Well, you can use space in another way. So don't clutter the screen with all borders, rounds, etc. This one is pretty clean. It's really easy to use and to read for the users. This one, what we used to, it's cluttered. So try to make a clean UI without too much trouble. And what's a really good test? If you ask people, just draw me your PC screen. And in the past, they were drawing square with a little X on the top. Maybe the maximize, minimize, blah, blah, some buttons. So they would draw only the Chrome around your application. If you ask people to draw a picture of a phone app or a Windows 8 app, they will draw the content. It's all about the content. It's not about the stuff around it. That's part of it. Fast and fluid. We do a lot of stuff with animations. And there's already a lot of stuff inside the platform which help you create those animations as well. And I'm just copying stuff which is already there. So the inbox does it like this. I try to copy it as well. So make sure you use animations in a good way. And authentically digital. This is what we used in the past. I think that a lot of people, like it's the same as like the save button. It's a little floppy. I bet my daughter will never see a floppy in real life unless she goes to a museum. But people are still using a floppy disk to save, or like a dialer for a phone. Nobody uses a dialer anymore. We still dial a number, but the dialer doesn't exist anymore. So don't try to copy the real world, because everybody knows it's not the real world when you work digitally. Change that. and win as one. So if you have the chance, try to make like a unified experience. And my colleague Talan demos it on the in our theater, where you have like an Xbox and Windows 8 and a Windows Phone app and working as one. It's okay to have a different experience. And I was using an example, a big line of business app on big Windows and some companion app on your Windows Phone, which you carry with you all the time. It's a pretty good combination and can be pretty useful. So you might not be doing all your financial administration on your phone, but approving an expense report, that sounds pretty a pretty common task when you're on the road. So think about these kind of combinations and connecting these two systems together. So we have tools to help designers as well. So let me just first show you a little bit about the difference in, I still have time, right? Yes, which is the, here it is. So this is my phone, my Lumia. The first thing you see is the lock screen. I have a weather app installed, which, why is it now? Here it is. Which is integrated. So the moment I stepped out of the plane and switched on my phone, it figured out the location, and the app changed my background image with the weather in Spain, which is pretty nice. It was terrible in Amsterdam. It also has the integration with the calendar and some counters for my mail. You as an app developer can integrate on the lock screen as well. So if I unlock my phone, this is my start screen. It's personalized for me. I moved to the US, but I still use a lot of Dutch news apps. I didn't find good US versions. You see my calendar. There's like I have three notifications, some photos. And here I have two different weather apps. The one on the right side is from Microsoft, and on the left side is from the guys from Weatherflow. So if I open this app, it's a nice app. It follows all the rules and the design principles. It's clean, not too much clutter. It's fast and fluid, etc. But if I open this app, it's a different experience. Oh, I have to wait, but that's different. So it uses some animation when building up the screen. I can go to another city. It will load the data and animate it in. When I swipe up, it will show you a different view. This is all the same modern UI, using the same modern UI principles, but they all look completely different, which is okay. So it's up to you as a developer, and hopefully a designer who can help you, to build an app which will support your application. So, and there's plenty of examples how you can differentiate your app without being the same kind of style you see everywhere. Yes. So we have Visual Studio, which has a designer, but we also have this tool called Expression Blend, which is installed automatically when you install the Windows Phone SDK. And what you can do with Blend create a new project. There's a few different things. Mainly it's used, well, we say interaction designer or designer. So the thing is, and sometimes we see this happening and it works really well, is that the developer builds all the view models, the data access, etc., and the designer is creating the screens, attaching the screens and events to the different models, doing animations and the flow through the app, connecting the different pages. It depends on how your team is structured, right? But as a developer, you can use this tool as well. So the simplest thing is, I'm not a designer, so I'm going to design something which is, well, I think pretty fancy, but a real designer might not like it. I want to have a button, and I'm going to click on this button, and I'm going to create some shape, rectangle. So what I want to create now is like a little animation which I can use to move this rectangle. It's not something you're going to use, but it's more about how you're going to create animation storyboards, transformations, etc. This tool will help you do that. So I click on creating a storyboard, which is demo storyboard. And it'll give you some kind of timeline in the lower left corner. And now I can change, because the recording is on, which you see here, the properties of this object. So when I go, I have to record a keyframe first. After 1 second, I want this thing to be blue. I want to transform it. And this tool is going to be confusing the first time you use it. There's loads and loads of bland video tutorials on internet. It doesn't matter if it's like a WPF or a Silverlight movie. Watch them and learn, and just watch the video and do it side by side. You will learn pretty fast, and it's an amazing tool once you get to know it. I can do some transformation and projection change and scale. I can move it a little bit. And after 2 seconds, I want it to be here. I want to be. It's crazy, I know. You're already pretty impressed with my designer skills, is my guess. So when you play it, awesome. But it can be even better, really. Just watch me. So it needs to be bouncy, right? You can't have design without bounciness. So let's bounce it around. And this one needs even better bounce. Elastic is awesome. Springiness, it needs to be a lot of springiness. So let's see what I did now. Awesome, right? This is going to be a 5-star app with a great design. I'm going to win awards, my guess. And what you can do is when you go to, I have to build it first. I go to the click event. I just call my .begin. I run my project in the emulator. Oh, I created in 7.0 web, I guess. So this will load up. And while it does that, there it is. It's an 8 version. Installs the application, and there it goes. And there it is. My cool animation. So pretty easy to do. Another really, really nice feature of Blend. Oh, here it is. When I switch back to my page, I just get rid of this stuff. You have to work with data all the time. So a Blend gives you the possibility to create sample data, which is nice. So I create my sample data inside the project. And I can say, okay, this property needs to be a photo, image, and I call it image, and I have a title. From the type string, and I want to be it a name. We all have some pre-populated templates like an address, an email address, etc. And what I can do now is I drag and drop this collection on my screen. It pre-populates your test data, so I can just lay out. Where's my reset layout? No, just drag and drop manually. And I want to change this, so I go to my list box. And change the template a little bit. So it's a stack panel. It needs to be horizontal. Where is it? And don't see it. Oh, here it is. Horizontal. I can change it a little bit. I can change the margins if I want from the text to have it more, give it more space, etc. So this is tool is you know, you can edit the data as well as you want. You can connect it to an XML file. You can pre-populate it. You can encode. Connected to your database, but for a designer, it already has some data you can work with and change the templates. And I'm a terrible designer. You can change the picture, make it bigger, change the text, maybe have some more text than I need it, and you change it, save it, and the developer can hook it up to a real data source instead of your sample data. So if I go to my project, you can see it added the sample data over here. And you can change it here, modify it a little bit, or you can hook it up in code to a real data source. So Blend is helping you designing the interface and gives you help like doing the animation and the storyboarding, sample data for design so you can build the screens without having the connection to the real data, and a developer can just glue things together afterwards. So what do we have more? So we are TechEd, a lot of enterprise developers. So building apps is pretty easy to get started at least. Building great apps, that's a bit hard. But you can also build apps which are interesting for your enterprise. So normally when you build an app, you upload it to the portal, Microsoft certifies the app, and people can download it, buy the app, or it's a free app, or whatever you want. You can also build apps for your company. We call it enterprise apps. So you can enroll your phone in an enterprise environment by an MDM environment like Intune or Mobile Iron or AirWatch. You can send people a certificate which they can install and they can sideload your own apps. What we can do is when we unroll your device, we only remove the enterprise apps. We don't remove the Angry Birds so you won't lose your progress. But we just concentrate about the enterprise stuff. So how do you get the apps to the users? That's up to you. You can build a company hub, which is an app which discovers all the apps installed, figure out from some website, oh, these are the apps available, you already have this app installed, so you can launch it, or this app is not installed, click here to install your app. It can be smart, okay, you're a sales guy, you will see sales apps, you're a marketing guy, you will see marketing apps. It's up to you. You can use the default portal from Intune or the mobile device management providers, or you can build one yourself. This certificate is bought by your company through Symantec. Costs about, I think, $300. They verify if you really are who you say you are. And once you have the certificate, you need to enroll that to your users. You can do it through email, the secure website, protected by login and password, or through the MDM. And then it opens up quite a bunch of interesting scenarios. Might be like a people finder, expert finder you use on your internet. People can use it on the road. Process guides, they need it when they're on the road. There's a company who built an app for cities where they can go to a graveyard and found where there's empty space. Bit different scenario. Expense reports is a pretty common one. Things like that. So you can connect to your line of business apps. And if you need to be secure, you can use, for example, the Azure Service Bus Relay, which connects your system to the internet so you can connect from your phone through your system on-premise as well. It's all up to the developer what kind of apps you want to build and distribute. You can obviously distribute your app through the store as well if you want. And we see that, for example, with CWR Mobility, they have a CRM client. It's a free app in the store. You need to buy some server-side product. You have to install on a server where it connects to. So you figure out, you log in a password, and it will connect to your backend. That's up to the developer how you want to solve that problem. The last thing I want to show you on my machine before I go to the final slides is some of the tools you have. Are people familiar with NuGet? NuGet, our package manager in Visual Studio? Yes? Ah, great. But not everybody. So what it does is like a package manager. We have a lot of resources online where you can use in your applications. One of the most interesting is the Windows Phone Toolkit. The Windows Phone Toolkit is built by people from the Microsoft Phone Division, but it's out of sync with the SDK. So it gives us the opportunity to update this toolkit more often than we do update the SDK. So there's like a few controls in there. You might be missing them in the default SDK. There's the default animations you can use to flip your pages or slide them in and out, what you want. And you can install that from the internet, just like a download, install it. You can also install it through the package manager. And just because not everybody knows it's there. So you can do install package, and then it's, I think, WayPay Toolkit. So it goes online, figures out if this toolkit exists, what the dependencies are from this toolkit, and what you saw on the right side really quickly is it now adds the reference to the Windows Phone controls, the toolkit. It added some assets, the resources. So it already changed the project for you. And what's cool is if you check in this project and somebody else checks it out on his machine or her machine, it automatically will use NuGet to retrieve the latest version of the packages which are referenced in the project. So everybody stays current with the latest version if you want. And it's an option you can switch off, obviously, in Visual Studio as well. Using NuGet on Windows Phone is awesome. There's a lot of nice libraries out there you can use for development, which makes your life easier, etc. So once you're up, okay, yeah, I want to do this. You go to dev.windowsphone.com. Here where you can get the SDK or you can submit your app. You need a developer account to publish an app and unlock your phone. If you have one, you can log in on your dashboard. I know I'm not going to be rich from my apps. There's other people who can. I have only free apps. I don't want the responsibility of paid apps, because if people pay, they might want something from you and support and all that crazy stuff. It's free, they start complaining and say, well, no worry, it's a free app, so I don't care. I have a few apps like the Rubber Duck, which is, by the way, download, I think, 16,000 something. Let me see. Yep, 16,000 times, can you imagine that, my Rubber Duck? And it has like over almost 1,000 reviews with a 4. So many stars average. The trick I used is there's a lot of tricks, and on Friday we have a session with Emilio about how you can monetize your app. And there's like little tricks. For example, if you start up the app for the fifth time and you ask for a review, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be having a good review. Why would people start up an app they don't like for the fifth time? So unless it's like a banking app you want to need every time, but if people start up the Rubber Duck for the fifth time, they probably like it. So you ask for a review, which is a task, and they pop up the review. Do you want to review this app? Yes. And they give you a great review. There's a little tricks like that you can use to have better responding people responding to your app. So this is where you upload the app as well, and then you need to provide your screenshots, the description of your app, in which category it's going to be, what's the pricing, do you have in-app purchases you can define, and how expensive are those? This is the portal you use for that kind of stuff. So it's really helping you. And you can upload a 7.0 version and an 8.0 version of the same app, which will just be treated like one SKU, the different steps. And you can even split up, for example, make a specific version for China. If you use the map control, for example, there are different rules in different parts of the world. The same for content. In some areas of the world, they are a bit more strict about what content you can use in your app than other parts of the world. So you might have a different version for that area. Maybe even different language versions you want to distribute separately with the images which are done per country. So this is the portal where you can do all this fancy stuff. And then that's why you start with your great idea and you implement it, and here's where you upload it to the world. And what I think is really cool, and obviously that's something Apple did well with introducing the store on the phone, is that from your desk somewhere in the attic, you can build an app, and you can submit your app, and you can publish it in 192 markets all over the world. So people, I know my app is used in Congo, in New Zealand, in South Africa, and in Russia. People give you feedback, they send you emails with questions. So it's pretty nice to start building apps and distribute them all over the world and get response from those people. Localizing is an interesting one to get more downloads. The Visual Studio tools help you localize the apps, what you're used to in .NET as well, right? Same technology you can use already. So there's a lot of stuff available for you as a developer or reuse your existing knowledge to build apps which work globally. So the world is really flat by submitting your app to the entire world, which I think is pretty cool. And if you start charging for apps, it's like the 70-30%. So 70% is for you, 30% is for Microsoft. Oh, no. So, and the slides are downloadable, so there's all the links in there. I want to point you to a few different sessions. At 5 o'clock, my colleague will show you how you can collaborate and work with all the tools you already have. Oh yeah, by the way, make sure you fill out the cards you got when you entered the room. There's going to be a raffle after the session. Tim will take the cards for you, so we'll draw a winner. You have to be here to win. If you're not here, bad luck for you. HTML5 session from Rob Tiffany. The Network Survival Kit is really nice. This session, if you're interested in building Windows 8 apps and Windows Phone apps, and they're all in your session, but I just want to point out which one would be interesting for you. If you're interested in how security works in the phone, there's an entire hour just about our security model for Windows Phone 8. Martin session with C++, I think he will show Windows 3.11 as well, right?
Absolutely.
So there's going to be Windows 3.11 in the session. How cool is that? He's going to port his old library to Windows Phone 8. On Thursday, if you like big scale enterprise apps with a lot of servers, go to Rob Tiffany's session. You can speechify your app by Rob Miles. Background agents, so how we can run apps in the background, so deep dive. There's going to be a session about enterprise apps as well. If you want to use databases by SQLite, for example, there's a great session about that as well. So yeah, that's, even if you're a SharePoint, I know if you're SharePoint developers in the room, doing phone stuff with SharePoint, awesome. So Jeremy will take you through that, the sessions, which is pretty nice. And if you want to earn money with Windows Phone, don't we all? The last session on Friday is interesting. It's the last nice tips and tricks and some samples from people who made money on Windows Phone apps and talk through the different scenarios you want. So well, there's an hands-on labs if you want to go through some stuff. And I think I'm going to be collecting the cards and do a raffle, right?
Yes.
And give you a really nice Nokia Lumi 920, which is awesome. It's a red one.
Ooh.
Anybody cut cards in the back? So if you have more questions, there's a lot of experts at the booth. There's some MVPs. I will be there forwarding you to the MVPs when there's a real question. Tim will be there handing out more phones, because in the tier sessions you can win phones as well. The Windows Connected experience, that's really worthwhile to watch 15 minutes to see how these three screens are working together. I think that was it. Yeah, the free phone and all the resources. All right, let's do the draw. And then there's time for questions, so you can come to me or just shout out and I will repeat the questions.
Just
is your card in there?
God wish.
I feel this one. Parag Patwa. Ah, congratulations. Thanks for your time. I hope you get some idea about what Windows Phone development is and how to get started. I think it's cool. It's really nice to do. If it's for your hobby or for your work, if there are questions, raise your hand. Come to me, and I will be here for a while. So thanks for your time.